Good morning. If you don't know who I am, I'm Patrick McGinnis. I know I was here last week, but if you weren't around, I am the owner, operator, whatever, of Breathe Coffee House, which mostly just means I ignored a calling God gave me about 15 years ago and finally did it about 3 years ago and got rolling on. We talk a lot, what you guys are even talking about here today, about getting connected into the community. Finding ways that we actually generate conversation. And I'm first to let you know, I know how hard that is to start that if you're in the middle of lunch break at work, or if you're trying to figure out how to do it after school, or trying to figure out why is it if I can't get somebody to church, how can I have a conversation about Christ? So the whole goal of the coffee house was to give you guys an avenue to do that, to facilitate that process, that everybody, even if you don't drink coffee, can invite somebody out for a drink and you can sit down and have a conversation for 10 minutes and be intentional with it. So that's who we are, what we are about, where our background is. We're a nonprofit as well. We survive on, I see myself as a missions field. We survive on donations and hopefully everything kind of breaks even when it comes to the coffee. But the goal is that we get churches to engage in the community and help along the way as we get there. If you're looking for other volunteer opportunities, I heard that mentioned early on. We do community meals every other Sunday on the second and fourth. With as much a goal of anything is to get folks engaged with other people again, where you can sit down and have a meal with people. It's not necessarily trying to find every person out there who may be hungry, but at least find every person out there who needs to have a meal with somebody else, the lonely and anybody else. And so you can sit down and visit with folks who are looking for a meal. I promised Kevin this would be uplifting. It's been a rough week. I don't know about for any of you this week, but it's been kind of an emotional, as it is often around 9/11 for a lot of people, it's an emotional week. But for my family, it's a little bit extra emotional. 9/11 was also the day that my best friend's daughter was killed in a car accident. She was a mentor to my younger children. She was a dear friend to my family and to my older children. And she was a light for all these things we always talk about doing and reaching out into your community and not sweating what people look like or whether or not their background is. And she was always that. And so she inspired my whole family. And we lost her early. And then we celebrate her life this week. So it's always kind of a rough week. And I'm one of those as well that when I look back at 9/11 stuff, I can't not just feel melancholy all week. And then we got news that a friend, neighbor of my kids and a friend of several of my friends and a guy who I went to men's encounter with a few years back committed suicide this week. And he, a friend of mine had poured into him over many years. And I don't know about you, but I never can shake that sickness of that feeling and where we can be for people and why we aren't. And talk to family and friends this week multiple times. When you encourage people to talk, they actually do. And when you sit across from me, I was also talking to people and my family and my friends with hurting, all the hurting children and youth that we have in our community and trying to find their spot and where they fit. And then I even talked to my spouse and I talked to friends of mine who have a Bible study on Friday mornings. And I'm aware of how often it is that we feel that we don't fit, or we don't have value, or what's wrong with us. And I got a message yesterday from a student that I had taken on a mission trip 6 years ago, apologizing for something that she was in an abusive relationship, and she sends me a message apologizing for what happened 6 years ago, which she had nothing to do with. But then again, I feel her hurt, and how could she hang on to this thing for 6 years when I haven't seen her? And she's still struggling with that. And then I had a woman come into the coffee house who had dealt with her son killing himself accidentally. And this was 3 years ago, and she still just has these days, you know, that she just can't deal with it. And she was wanting to talk. And all of those things end up with these answers of, I don't know. I don't know. I can hold your hand and I can pray with you and we can talk, but I don't have answers for all this stuff. There's so much pain. There's so many people that are longing for their world to go a different way. There's so many people, and I know you're all included, we're all included, that why do we have all these horrible situations? Why do we have all this unfathomable pain? Why don't things work out the exact way that we want them to? And I don't know what to say. I don't know if you do. When sorrows are so overwhelming. And then I go and I open up my Bible and I read things like in John 14:27 and John 16:33. Jesus says these words. John 14:27 says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." And then I hear Jesus say in John 16:33, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." And I got to be honest, my response, my internal response, and now my external response to those kinds of quotes from Christ are, sounds just like words to me, because I'm not running into a lot of people with peace. You? I'm seeing a lot of hurt, and I know there's a lot of questions as to what peace really means, or what is he actually talking about? And then I had this question, and I asked this one, actually, to that lady I was talking to the other day. Do you ever wonder why is it that God sent His Son, why did He send Jesus to live here for 30 years, kind of unknown, and then spend 3 years out actually engaging people and talking to people and doing ministry and finding followers, and then being crucified, then being tortured and crucified and died and rose again for our sins. When in the end result, right, the death and resurrection of God's Son is what saves us from our sin, right? So couldn't He have done it a little different? Couldn't it have been a big... He could have waited a little bit longer. We could have had on all the TVs. It could have been an instantaneous thing. The sky could have opened up. We're saying, "Hey, here it comes. I'm going to sacrifice my Son for you all." Over. Right? Couldn't He have? We didn't really have to have all these years. So why is it that we had all these years of a life? Why did Jesus have all these years? I asked that question to that lady, but I still ask that question to myself. Why didn't they just get it over with one big show, so we all could have heard it and seen it? I have a theory, and I'm going to share. You know anything about coffee? Do we have any coffee connoisseurs in here? Okay, I'm going to go through. I'm in two big, terrible situations. I got the pastor of the church sitting listening to me today. And then I also have my local coffee expert from the coffee house, my son, who's sitting here too. So here I go. Not good at either of these things. Okay, coffee trees. Don't know if you know anything about coffee trees. They grow up, they can be about 30 feet high, covered with green waxy leaves. And they grow berries on them, on all sides. It takes nearly a year for a cherry to mature on that tree before it's able to be picked. And most of the time, a tree takes about 5 years in order to have full fruit production. And they can live 100 years. They're kind of like a person. They can live that long. And their most productive times are between years 7 and 20. But with proper care and maintenance, they can give more beans than that. So, I have a request for you, please. Will you grab this bag of coffee, or Drew or somebody else can come up here and help if you want. Will you take that around? Everybody grab a coffee bean, or somebody else can help. Just everybody get a coffee bean, please. Our coffee, that's coffee from our coffee house. We have some guys in Kansas City who go direct to the source, buy that, and roast it. And I have a request for you as you go around. I want you to look at your bean, take a good, careful look at it. When you get it, I want you to smell it, I want you to observe it. I want you to see how beautiful it is, because it is your bean to keep. And I want you to name it. Okay, after you get a good feel for what your bean is and what it looks like and what you appreciate about your bean, I want you to give it a good name. Okay? Everybody's got to name your bean. Can you do that? So, The way in the coffee producing areas of the world, they plant, that's actually a seed. So you would actually, although it's now it's roasted, it wouldn't work, but if you had a grain seed, you could plant that bean and it would grow a tree. Okay? It would take about three, as I had said before, 3 to 4 years minimum for that tree to produce any kind of coffee beans. They can do them, they pick, or can be picked twice a year at different times they can actually produce. But then once those beans get out, or once they pick the beans in a green state, sometimes you'll see them green, red, whatever, they have to quickly start in a harvesting and processing mode. So I want you to follow the lifespan of a coffee bean with me. Okay, remember you got your bean and his name. Okay, this is your bean's travel through its life. It gets picked off of the tree. It then goes and it gets put in large water tanks. There's a couple different ways to do this, but they spread them out and then they put them in big water tanks so that the bean can be separated, or the skin of the bean can be separated from the bean itself. They get weighed out through all these different water channels by different weights so they can fall into different areas, and they sit in a fermentation tank for up to 2 days. So eventually an enzyme builds up and it pulls off the skin, or will irritate the skin off the outside of the bean. Then after that happens, they take all the beans back out and you either lay them out in the sun, in very hot sun because these are in tropical conditions, and they dry them out. But they can't just leave them laying out there. They have to rake them over and over and over. They have to roll your poor little bean. What's his name? Everybody hear me? What's your bean's name? Okay, so they've been rolling around through the water, gone through all that. Now they get dragged out of there. They get thrown. Your poor little bean gets thrown out of there, and they rake them around in the hot sun repeatedly. They got to keep moving them over so they don't spoil. They got to boom. Is it comfortable for the bean? Probably not. Probably not. It takes a while. They've got to dry this bean out until the moisture is decreased to 11%. If you pick a fresh coffee cherry, they're hard, but they're filled with moisture. So it's got to decrease by 90% to get it to be ready for the next stage in the coffee. Then it goes to milling. Milling beans go to process the hull off of that bean, which basically means rubbing it against something with friction. So if you were to take your bean, I just dropped mine, but if you rub it on like sandpaper or something comparable, millstones is what it, it's basically that. They roll them around, move them around over something so it will tear off the hole. You got to do that long enough to take that. Do you think being rubbed on something like that over the course of a day would feel good? No, I imagine it would feel a little irritating. Your skin is getting worn off of you. So your poor bean is now gone to that point. The hole has gone through that, through a milling machine. And then they actually, because if you look, these aren't so great, but a lot of the coffee beans you'll see are actually shiny. That's actually another milling cycle. They go through to another finer degree. It's called polishing. So by the time it gets to you, you go, oh, look at my shiny beans. I'm quite sure that at that process, you even have a finer milling process. It would be no more impressive. So you were born in beautiful tropical island or somewhere neat in Costa Rica, and then you get shipped. You've gone through all this process. Then your poor little bean, somebody comes up, grabs them, and they said, hey, throw them in a bag, put them in a jute bag by the millions, a bunch of strangers. You all get thrown together, and they ship you off to somewhere else. They export you. Then some guy comes in, or girl, and says, hey, we need to figure out how good you are. So they judge you. They take each of your favorite beans by name, and they look at you, and they smell you, and they judge you to see whether or not they like you or not. And if they don't like you, they cast you aside. And if they do like you enough, then they will actually grind you up, and they put you in a coffee cup, and they taste you, and then they tell the world this is good or bad or otherwise. So they make sure everybody knows you're either good, bad, or otherwise, and they judge and make sure they know your bean has been judged. And if it's not, we have no use for you, and they cast you aside. Then when they take all the beans back to the people who had sent them down there on their tasting, they then get to take your baby bean, and they throw them in an oven. They throw them up to 550 degrees, it's pretty typical, and they roast them to just the right length. Again, they get totally turned over and over and over every day, or every so often, in order to keep the roasting process consistent. You may have seen some of those roasters. They roll the beans all the time. And you got to get the interior temperature up to 400 degrees. Again, I doubt it feels good on your baby bean. The process would be excruciating, wouldn't it? And then, after all of that, if you make it through all of that, and you're still actually judged good enough to be used, then we take you out of the roaster, and we throw you in a grinder. Right? So I got a grinder up here. You take the beans out. At that point, you get them all roasted perfect, and oddly correct does ours really well. Get them all roasted. And then you have blades, and you grind up your beans into a little itty-bitty powder. Now, you can grind them at different levels, depending on how you want your coffee to taste or what you want to get out of your coffee. So we do espresso all the way to our house coffee is a French press. And a French press, which is ground, this is pretty a rough grain. And we put those in a big metal pot after they're all ground. You decide which way you want to grind it. If you're doing an espresso grind, it's literally powder. And depending on how quickly you want the water to pass through. But then after you've gone through all that, your poor baby bean has made it all the way to the point of getting to the grinding cycle, has been messed up to that level. You then get put in to a, if you're doing your French press, you get put into a pot like this, boiling water, or nearabouts boiling water, gets poured over you. And you get to sit for a little over four minutes with your boiling water. And then when you're done with that 4 minutes, zoom, bling, ding, there went your 4 minutes, you then get smooshed. Your poor baby bean gets mashed down at the bottom of that, and you pour that out as French press coffee. We didn't go long enough, so it doesn't taste great. If you happen to be doing espresso and you have good powder, which we have in this grinder, you put that into what's called a portafilter. You even it out, make it all even. You get a tamper. You lay it down there straight, and you smash as good as you can in there to smash out that coffee, that powdered coffee. You literally could, if I had it as fine as it should be, flip this upside down, it won't come out. That's how oily and how it can be mashed down. You then stick that into an espresso machine, and 132 pounds of hot water pressure is brought to bear on that espresso, and it forces water through itty-bitty holes that you can't even see at the bottom of that filter. They're teeny tiny. 132 pounds of pressure. Again, I don't think any of these things would feel good if you happen to be in this process. If you do pour-overs or drips or anything else, you grind it a little bit differently, you change your temperature a little bit more, you take a little bit longer, a little bit less. But there is a particular flavor that gets brought out by each of these processes. You roast a little bit longer, it changes it. You roast a little bit less, it changes it. You don't use a French press, you use a drip, it changes it. You use a pour-over process and let it go a little bit longer, it changes it. Every one of these things produces something a little bit different. If you talk to certain people in different areas of the world, they will tell you this is the only way you should do it. If you talk to certain people down at my coffee house, they'll tell you you're doing it wrong. You're doing it right. This is the best coffee I've ever had. This is not so great. When I was growing up, my grandpa used to burn it on a campfire, and that's the way I like it. You never know, but all those things are true. They're all true, and I can't tell you what your favorite coffee is or even if you like coffee because it's your own taste, right? But they're all done with the same starting bean. They're all done in the same way, and although it changes over time. Every step has variation. Every step leads to different results. Every step is out of the control of the coffee bean. Every step. The coffee bean does not get asked, nor does the coffee grower or anybody else care whether the coffee bean doesn't want this to happen in their life. They never ask. The coffee grower and the end result person, I don't know where this whole thing got started, but anybody bold enough to actually take a little bite of your bean? Does it taste good? No, why not? I have coffee. I love coffee. How come my coffee bean doesn't taste good? There's something about the process that changes it. Because there's something about the process, and somebody who knows far more than me how to process a coffee bean to the point you could take something you'd never stick in your mouth up front because it would be terrible, to the point where you'd say, man, I can't live without that stuff. I need it every day. I want it every day. It's great. I look forward to my cup of coffee. All of that goes on so that in the end, your coffee bean, your very favorite, what's your coffee bean's name? Bobby? Bob the Bean. That's beautiful. So that Bob the Bean When he is all said and done and ground up, what has Bob the Bean's purpose been? For him to be better, or to actually produce something for someone else to consume? When Bob goes through all the exact right processes that Bob never chose, Bob ends up being a nice hot liquid that people love. They love Bob the Bean. Bob the Bean didn't think it was a great process, did he? Bob the Bean was frustrated and irritated throughout. Bob the Bean's entire life was to produce something for someone else. You ever wonder why God didn't just send Jesus in the sky and just die and get the whole thing over with? So we all knew that we were saved from the get-go if we accepted and saw that. You ever wonder why he walked around here for 30 years and lived a life and then lived 3 years that culminated in a whole lot of people hating him, that culminated in a whole lot of people kicking him out, that culminated in a whole lot of people not welcoming them there, that resulted in not having a home, that resulted in a lot of walking around to places he didn't really want to go, that resulted in him taking a path out of his way to go help people who had lots of problems. They weren't fun conversations. Do you ever wonder why it all worked that way? Maybe it's because he didn't just want to save us from death. Maybe he wanted to teach us how to live with peace. He clearly didn't spend those 33 years getting rid of all the pain in the world. Unless you know something I don't know. But he did teach us how to live with joy and with peace. He wanted to show us that life just isn't about the end result, but actually what you do today and how you accept it today. We survive day by day. We were designed to live one day at a time. That's all we can handle. When we look at the bigger picture, we immediately get overwhelmed. When we think, where should I be in 5 years, we get immediately overwhelmed. When we think about where our kids should be, or what should be happening next week, or what I should be, we immediately are overwhelmed. But I can be something today. I can be me today. Adults need 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night, so they're awake 13 to 15 hours every day, over and over and over. Is that an accident? Have we figured out a good scientific way to get out of that? Do you think we wouldn't have produced it by now so we could be more efficient? We just can't seem to get rid of that thing. We are these daily creatures. That's how we have to live. Each day, by the way, has enough trouble of its own. You don't need tomorrow's trouble. Hey, guess what? That actually is in the Bible. Matthew 6:34. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. The struggles of today are designed to bring out something, to prepare something, to get you ready for what you're going to need the next day. And you can have peace today knowing that's true. I can have joy today knowing whether or not I'm getting an oven, whether I'm getting ground up, whether I'm getting jiggled around on sandpaper, that what I'm going through today is prepping me for what I need tomorrow, because I'm not the one who knows what tomorrow looks like, but the coffee bean grower does know what tomorrow looks like. And if you trust him, he's equipping you for your next day today. And he never misses a beat. And so all the times we're in a hurry to get going on further down the road, he's equipping you. He's getting rid of the skin to set you up for the hot sun. He's allowing you to be dried out somewhere else where you may be needed more than where you are today. He's allowing you to be roasted so that others will be encouraged. He's grinding you up so that all that is within you can produce a marvelous flavor for somebody other than you. Jesus was broken. He was tortured. He was ground up. He was spit out. We are not the first to be overwhelmed. We are not the first to know that we don't know what to do. We're not the first to not understand why things are happening. We aren't the first to be scared of tomorrow. We aren't the first to believe that everything is falling apart and we don't know where to go from here. We're not the first to feel like there's no hope. As a matter of fact, there isn't one in the history of mankind that hasn't felt this. We aren't the first. Horatio Spafford was married to Anna Larsen in Norway. Aside from being a prominent lawyer, he and his wife were also close friends of evangelist Dwight Moody. Spaffords were quite popular in Chicago in the 1860s, but they were no strangers to tragedy. They invested in real estate north of the city. However, this was taken away from them during the Great Fire of Chicago in 1871. Prior to the Great Fire that same year, the Spaffords suffered the loss of their 4-year-old son, scarlet fever. In a desire to give his family a time to rest, they planned a trip to Europe. However, due to an unexpected business need, Horatio needed to stay behind for a few days while his wife and 4 daughters sailed ahead via the French Ocean liner. On November 21st, 1873, it departed, and then it was reported that Anna took their daughters to the deck where they knelt and prayed for their life to be spared because their ship collided with the sea vessel. The ship sank in 12 minutes, carrying with it 226 passengers, including Horatio and Anna's children. Unfortunately, only Anna survived among his family. The rescue brought Anna to Cardiff, Wales after 9 days. She sent a telegram to her husband saying, "Saved, alone, what shall I do?" Not long after Horatio sailed out to join his grieving wife, as he passed near where his daughters died, he penned this: "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, let this blessed assurance control, that Christ hath regarded my helpless estate, and hath shed his own blood for my soul. My sin, oh, the bliss of this glorious thought, my sin not in part, but the whole, is nailed to the cross, and I bear it no more. Praise the Lord, oh, my soul. For me be it Christ hence to live. If Jordan above me shall roll, no pang shall be mine, for in death as in life, thou wilt whisper thy peace to my soul. But Lord, 'tis for thee, for thy coming we wait. The sky, not the grave, is our goal. O trump of the angel, O voice of the soul of the Lord, blessed hope, blessed rest of my soul. O Lord, haste the day when the faith shall be sight, the clouds be rolled back as a scroll, the trump shall resound, and the Lord shall descend. Even so, it is well with my soul. It is well with my soul." Jesus walked around the earth for 3 years, not because it was required to save us, but rather to show us how to live. And not just to get by, but how to live abundantly. But not abundantly with a bunch of stuff and leisures, but a life with peace, a life with joy, regardless of the circumstances. And the method he used was to just get up every morning and meet who he was supposed to meet that day. Mourn with the people he was supposed to mourn with that day. Talk to the people he was supposed to talk to that day. Love the people he was supposed to love that day. And get back up and do it again. The individual trials of our life, the individual trials of our community, of our family, of our church, are the things that we were designed to embrace. They are the things we're supposed to get up and do today. And today, we can have hope. Today, we can have hope. We don't have to worry about tomorrow. There's enough to worry about today. We have a Father who knows us. He knows today. He knows tomorrow. He knows where He's leading us. He wants us just to use our lives to create something for other people, so that we can have peace no matter what we're going through. And have peace like a river. We can have peace in each day by trusting a loving God who is bigger than us and knows how to make good coffee.
You've You've been listening to a message presented at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.